Welcome everybody to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends. Wherever you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, the Longhorn Republic, or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week, and I'm joined by a man who thinks you should have shootouts with your rivals, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
Absolutely adore alliteration, but barely believe careful consideration crafted. No, I'm going to stop. I can do ABCs. I'm not going to get all the way to R's. Look, Red River rivalry. It rolls off the tongue with alliteration. If you are wondering why I'm talking in alliteration, the official Learfield, what is it? Is it the State Farm? There's a sponsor attached, and I'm not looking at it right now, but I think it's like the State Farm Red River rivalry. Whoever it is, if I gave them free advertising, sorry. Anyways, it is completely rebranded. The former Red River Shootout was the Red River Showdown, which I think was the worst.
Yeah, absolutely, without
a doubt. I think we can all agree Red River Shootout is great. I think we can all understand, I guess. I don't know where Oklahoma ranks, but because Texas is, effectively the worst in school shootings and shootings. And, yeah, it's fine. We can leave that out. I'm okay without it. But I do like alliteration, so I'm okay with the Triple R Red River rivalry.
Even though we use that intro, we're not actually going to talk about OU. That's next week. Kami R will be here next
week. But it was pertinent.
Sorry for the bait and switch.
No.
It was pertinent. It was germane.
I will be gone for the OU preview. So that is my entire OU preview. That's it. It is the name of the game. Because when you beat someone 49-0, you don't really even have to talk about the game.
So I need your tier list. We know that Showdown is 3. Do you prefer rivalry or shootout? Let's just put it out there.
I prefer rivalry.
Okay. All right. I'll allow it. So, again, not here to talk about a rival. We're talking about BYU. We've got our BYU preview. It took a little bit to get it scheduled. Really appreciate the fellows over at Give 'Em Hell, Bring 'Em for helping us. One, shatter our family-friendly podcast image. And two, you never would have expected it from the guys from Provo. But also to help us preview BYU after we missed some schedule. Ship's passing on the night, but we finally got it taken care of. We'll have that preview. Kyle won't be a part of that because Kyle couldn't be here or been available for it, but we got it done anyways. And then we'll close the show out with some Down the 40 and some Bang the Drum. We are 46 days away from kickoff against Rice. If you're new with us, it's somebody's first podcast every week. We are going through each and every week of the Texas Longhorn schedule to preview the opponents. We've actually got two of them for you this week. You can go back in here. Texas Tech, Iowa State, TCU, and Kansas State. We've got now our first of the new members of the Big 12 joining us. We're previewing BYU today, and we'll actually have Houston on Thursday. But joining us today is Garrett McClintock, who is ruining our family-friendly rating from the Give 'Em Hell, Bring 'Em podcast. Garrett, man, how are you doing today?
Hey, come on. That's still family-friendly enough. I mean, if it's family-friendly in Provo, it's family-friendly everywhere
else.
That's
fair. That's right?
Except for maybe Waco. I don't know what they do down there.
No, it's our Iowa State guy. We always give him grief. He's the one that always we have to beep. It's fine, though. It's great. No. So you said there's a story behind the name, right? I want to hear the story about Give 'Em Hell, Bring 'Em, because it's a great name. So like, what's the deal?
So there was back in the day, this was before World War II, or I guess at the start of World War II. So Vaughn Kimball was the student body president at BYU, and he was also the quarterback on the football team. And he, right before the season started, he left and he went and enlisted in the Navy. And then he sent a Western Union telegram to the football coach. And it was he'd been enlisted for about a year, and this was in 1942. And the telegram he sent said, "Saturday, there's one thing more important than the war, and that is to beat Utah. This accomplishment would aid the morale of 25,000 alumni and aid the war effort. So give 'em hell, Brigham, give 'em hell." And that next day in 1942, after they did that, then that was the first time in probably that was like the first modern win, I would say, because there was this time, there's a weird time when BYU was a high school and then like they're playing against other universities. And so like different schools, like I think Utah counts the record against us differently, you know, versus what year and things. And so it was, so he sent that. And then the next day we beat Utah, and then Von Kimball, he ended up dying in the Battle of Bunker Hill. So it was, so, but that's been a phrase that, you know, we're trying to push it, you know, especially as we're coming into the Big 12, like every Big 12 school has to have their, you know, like hook 'em or gig 'em or sick 'em or whatever, you know.
All of the
so
M's.
Yes. And so, you know, it's like, so we had to have one, and it's, there've been a few people have said like, give 'em hell, bring 'em, or, you know, that story's like pretty legendary, you know, for Cougar fans. And so we've tried to make it a brand, you know, and kind of say like, hey, let's take this and own it. So it, especially cause we can't let TCU have it after they do the whole like riff ram, like sing song thing. So we have to claim that one.
I love it. Okay. That went from like ruining our family friendly cred to being like one of the more family friendly things we've ever had. Like, that's so inspirational. Like, let's put it on a shirt or something. So we are, as much as we love legends and talking about legends, we're going to talk about some football today. So it's been like a decade of independence for BYU, right? But they're coming to the Big 12. Officially, I guess, what, last week, Kalani Sitake was like at Big 12 Media Days and all of that. Funny enough, he hosted Sark, right, on his recruiting trip way back when. I don't know if that's a little-known fact. At least I didn't know it. So, like, I just want to know, like, what's the vibe? Like, coming to the Big 12, like, what's the vibe around the Cougar faithful? Like, how are they feeling? What are they excited about? Are they excited? Like, what's the vibe going on?
Definitely excited. Definitely feels like this is something that's been a long time coming, and that we've been, you know, deserving of this for much longer than it happened. You know, we thought that it was going to happen, and, you know, depending on who you talk to, we thought it was going to happen in 96 when the Big 12 was created, and you know, depending on who you talk to, that, you know, that it was Baylor was going to get left out and we were going to get in. And then, you know, comes around, and even in the late 90s, the PAC was reviewing expansion, and it was, there are people in the BYU admin that told that the PAC was going to have a vote to expand at 12 in the early in like 1999, and then that didn't happen, and then the Mountain West ended up forming, and then we kind of toiled around there for a little bit, and then when that wasn't feasible any longer, then is we kind of said, okay, well, we have to go independent because we can't stay here. But it, you know, the eye has always been on getting into a power league, and we thought it was going to happen with the Big 12 in 2010, and then again in 2016, and then it finally did happen in 2021. So it's, you know, finally, it just feels like it's and if you go back, there was an interview that Mitch Harper is the beat reporter for BYU, covers for KSL Sports, the big news station in Salt Lake City. And he did an interview with our athletic director, Tom Homo, and at Media Days, and kind of brought up that it's like, this is, it just feels like he asked Tom something about like Lavelle Edwards and his legacy. And Tom got like, he got choked up thinking about it. Talking about it. I was like, you know, that it's not, Lavelle passed in 2016. So like 7 years ago. And, you know, that he's looking down and thinking like that it was, he took over a program that legitimately was like just ahead of Eastern Michigan for having the worst record in all of the FBS level, or well, I guess it was the university level or whatever they called it in 1972. And then went on a run that, you know, very, very few programs have ever been blessed to be able to see the type of success that we've consistently had, you know, over the last 40 years, even though we haven't been, you know, like a top dog for the last while, but still, you know, very competitive every single season just about. And so it's really just a culmination of decades of, you know, blood, sweat, and tears that it kind of feels like the, hey, we're finally getting the recognition that we know we've deserved.
Yeah. And I mean, BYU is one of those like national brands that like, is, I think it's bigger than people give it credit for, especially, in the, like the, not the Midwest, but like the Eastern part of the West, I think is really like the best way to say it. You know, I've always had eyes on BYU. I think a lot of people have, so I'm excited. I think as somebody who's like, obviously we're exiting in the conference, but I think BYU is like a great addition for the conference. And I love the Big 12 for a lot of reasons. So I think I'm glad that it's going to be, that there are teams like BYU coming in that are going to help boost the cachet that the conference offers. Let's talk about the actual team. So you graduated quarterback Jaren Hall, who's with the Vikings now. Keaton Slovis coming in, you know, by, you know, Pitt via USC and all of that. You know, Jaren Hall was kind of the dude for the team last year. Slovis wasn't necessarily great at Pitt, but we also know, and people who listen to our podcast regularly have heard me, the Pitt Panthers did the exact opposite of everybody in college football. Rather than modernize their offense, they decided to absolutely put the brakes on it and go back to 1986.
Yeah, and they did that after he got there, so he really got dealt a crappy hand.
Very, very true. He came for one thing, came for Brendan Marion and all of that wide open offense, and got Iowa, but worse maybe, with the worst defense. Yeah. But anyway, so what are the hopes for the offense, like with that new addition, with the quarterback turnover? There's other turnover at other spots that we'll talk about in just a minute. But like specifically from the quarterback spot, like how and what do you expect from Slovis to replace a guy like Jaren Hall, who's kind of like a local legend?
It's kind of tough because you don't want to like predict, you know, the world for somebody. But it's, you know, I think that he can play every bit and, you know, play at the level, you know, every bit of the same level that Jaren Hall played at. Obviously, he doesn't have the legs that Jaren Hall did, so it's stylistically it's going to be a little bit different. But I mean, you're still talking about a guy when he was a true freshman at USC in 2019. He was playing in an offense where, you know, people were talking about him as a potential first round draft pick and a potential Heisman candidate, you know, down the road. And then he was playing great to start off the COVID season until he got hurt, and then he ended up and then 2020 happened, and then he was great during the start of the coach season, got hurt, and then he got hurt, majorly hurt, you know, messed up his shoulder, missed most of 2021. So he's had a bumpy road, but the feeling in the room right now is that we're going to see the return back to that 2019 season, and that he has an offense that fits his game and is very similar to what Graham Harrell was doing with him when he was a freshman. And so it is something that I think we're all excited to see. There's a lot of confidence, and it's really hard. I feel like this season more so than others, just with how big the transfer portal has become, where it's like hard to gauge even your own team. And you're kind of like, I don't know, like, what are we going to see who, and then it's like, okay, well, if I'm unsure about my own team, then what do we know about every other team? But I think I'm not worried at all about the offense with him. And I think obviously if he gets hurt, and it could be a total flop, but it seems like he has, you know, he's really fit in just from the jump, not even just on the field, but off the field. Like every guys are raving about him. You know, he's obviously he's not LDS, but he's, you know, taking pictures when, you know, guys are like giving a sermon at church, where he's like going in and he's, you know, been asked to speak in church or like teach a Sunday school lesson or something, where he's showing up to support other guys on the team. Like he's endeared himself greatly to a lot of BYU fans, just because he's gone all in on being at BYU and not just like, yeah, I'm here for 1 year, I'm just going to do my time and get out. And like, you know, and it's like he's been all in. And so I think that will definitely translate onto the field. And I hope we can recapture kind of that freshman magic that he had.
BYU feels like the kind of place where, like, if you're going to go there as a transfer, you have to be like all in. Like, you can't just be like the 1 year mercenary kind of guy.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. There's so the backup quarterback is a JUCO transfer, and he's similar, where he's kind of also been all in, but he's actually like a very, he's very Jewish. And so he's like, even I think he has like an NIL thing, like he's selling shirts that say like hashtag BY Jew. And I'm like, hey, you can make that joke. We can't, but that's hilarious that you are making it yourself. And it's, and so like they've had, like there's been, there's like one synagogue in Utah County, and he attends there, and like the rabbi has like come and like spoken to the team and stuff because, you know, he's there. And so it's, definitely, it's definitely a unique place. And when I go back to campus, I'm like, man, this is kind of weird. Well, how did I enjoy going to school? Right. But it's definitely a unique place. And so, you can't, if you are come in with like an attitude of just like being, you know, like just being a rental, or like, oh, I'm just going to do my time and get out, then it usually bleeds over into the locker room guys that kind of have that attitude, because it is a place that means more to most of the players. And so you can't really come and be the outsider. And you can't really have that attitude in most locker rooms, right? You can't bring the poison in.
So we'll stick with the passing game for a second. Another transfer who came in that kind of took over when he got there, Puka Nacua, is not there anymore, right? Leaving a void of like, almost 1,500 yards and 11 touchdowns in 2 years, yep. Like absolute monster. So like, how or who is going to try to replicate that production? You can't really replace a guy like Puka, but like, how do you try to replicate that production in the offense? Like, who's there to try to fill in?
The top three receivers are definitely going to be Chase Roberts, who had a monster game. He had over 200 yards against Baylor last year, and then was kind of dinged up for most of the season. But he was a kid that played in the Under Armour All-American game in high school. And when he signed, Fessy Satake, not Kalani Satake, his cousin Fessy, who's the receivers coach, said, you know, that Chase has the potential to be the best wide receiver in BYU history. That was what the comment was about him on signing day. And then it was also Cody Epps, who entered the portal for about 48 hours and then decided to stay. He played with Bryce Young at Mater Dei. He's undersized. It's kind of how he slipped to us just because he's on the smaller side, but he was on pace to be our leading receiver last year until a broken arm ended his season about game like 7 of the year. So he missed the back half of the season, but he's back and healthy now. And he's a stud. He was undersized and not quite the fastest, but just fast enough, but just kind of missing those measurables that a lot of, where he got passed over by a lot of the major programs out West. But it's, he prepped at Mater Dei and now he's had great coaching his whole life. And he can really play. And then Keanu Hill he's a fifth year COVID senior. But he took a bigger role last year. But he is definitely he's the solid, that big body, kind of the big body receiver coming out of the slot who is very reliable hands. He also comes from an athletic background. His mom, his brother is Roy Williams, not the Texas Roy Williams or the North Carolina, the Oklahoma Roy Williams. So
okay.
There's too many Roy Williams.
A lot of Roy Williams.
Yes. And so he's also a great player. So that's kind of the top three, but then they definitely hit the portal hard because there's a big drop off after that. There's a lot of young guys where it's, but you don't want to be counting on this freshman. So it's a pulled in, Keelan Marion, who was a starter at UConn, Darius Lassiter, who was a starter at Eastern Michigan. So there's brought in a few receivers where, the guys where they're not going to be like that Puka Nacua who can blow the top off and take over a game. But you think you have two of those and Cody Epps and Chase Roberts. And, as long as one of them is healthy, then they should be able to take the pressure off. And once you get down to that, third and fourth receiver, as long as you have a decent number one, then kind of you can, it's pretty plug and play in most offenses to just be the check down guy.
Love it. So let's switch sides and talk a little bit about the defense. Last year, I think we can just say the defense wasn't great.
It was bad.
Last year,
it was bad. We can say downright bad.
Okay, good. Yeah, they were 97th in points per game, I think is what we have in our notes. But and really, I think that shows that basically the entire staff turned over this offseason, I think is what that looks like.
The only defensive staff member that stayed, there were a couple of analysts that stayed, but the only actual on-field position coach that stayed on defense was the corners coach, Jannar Guilford. So he was retained. Everyone else was let go. Jay Hill was the head coach at Weber State, who's brought in as the defensive coordinator. Justin Enna and Kelly Papinga are both former BYU linebackers. Kelly Papinga was on the staff before, followed Bronco Mendenhall to Virginia, did a little pit stop at Boise State last year before coming home. And Justin Inna he's been all over as well. He was at Utah State. He was the defensive coordinator at Utah State under Gary Anderson, which that kind of derailed his career for a couple of years just because being anything related to Gary Anderson tends to do that. And then he was coaching with Brady Hoke down in San Diego State last year as their linebackers coach, so he's coming up as well. So it's there's definitely a lot of turnover, definitely turnover there, a lot of excitement. They've brought in a ton of guys, and that's why I don't really even know what to expect, because if I list off the top of my head, there's probably obviously depends on situation and kind of what package you're running, but of someone who would consider a starter or getting close to starter reps, there's probably 8 out of the 12 or 13, maybe 9 out of the 12 or 13 guys that just depending on matchup and week to week are going to getting the bulk of the reps, that kind of core 13 or 15, 14 players that are going to see most of the time. It's probably 8 or 9 of them are going to be guys that this is their first year in the program because we went portal hunting hard. So it definitely is going to be a massive turnover. And so it's a matter of, can they stay healthy and how much depth is there behind them? Because there were times last year when there was not a single player on the field who had another FBS offer. They were either a walk-on at BYU itself or what we in our podcast call a glorified walk-on, which is we were your only FBS offer. So nobody else wanted you, but we took you. You got at least come on, at least if UNLV isn't even talking to you or Louisiana Monroe, then that's you're a walk-on. Sorry. So there were times when it was just I remember what game it was. I looked at, I'll have to go back and dig it up, but we did the number of FBS offers per snap. And it was it was awful. It was just very much the philosophy of the old staff was, well, if we find someone with the raw measurables, we can coach them up to be good. And that doesn't always work. And, you can take one or two guys as a flyer like that. And you think maybe, you're playing in the wrong position, whatever, you can grow. But the, you know, you can't do that with all 11 of your guys. And then the old staff did this like weird hockey sub thing where there was times, and even on commentators and games, like there's if you watch our game against Arkansas last year, there was a play where they subbed out all 11 guys and like a full hockey lineup change, and the announcers were like, I don't think I've ever seen this before in all of my 40 years of playing and watching football. This is the strangest thing I've ever seen. We're like, yeah, you're telling us. But they was, and so it was definitely a welcome change, and it was kind of awkward. You know, I think most fans, you know, would have liked something to happen sooner, but also when you in 2020 and 2021, when you go like 21-4 of your last 25 games, it's hard to fire an entire side of the ball.
Yeah.
And so even if you were kind of, even if the problems were glaring there, but then it kind of last year was kind of all hell break loose. And it was within the program after the Arkansas game last year, there were some internal changes, and then it wasn't made public till the end of the season. But definitely excited to see the new defensive staff. And, you know, it's the same things you hear out of spring ball at every other school. It's like guys look bigger and faster than ever. The new strength coaches. Oh, we did also replace our strength and conditioning staff as well in the offseason. So the new, it's like, you know, the new strength coaches has them bigger and faster and leaner than ever. And guys are flying around. They're flying to the ball. They're hitting each other. Like,
oh, yeah.
You hear the same thing out of every school. We all drink the Kool-Aid come spring. And so it's going to be exciting. I think the schedule, the biggest thing, I think, other than being in a conference, and you know, where last year we started off top 25, we'd knock off Baylor at home, and then we head into this Oregon week where the conversation week three is like, well, there's a drop off after this week, and if they can get through this week, then it's like then there's a potential path to like going undefeated, maybe playing in the New Year's Six. We dropped that game in Eugene, and then it's kind of like, well, now the season is done. Like we knew what bowl we were going to. It's very blunt. Like it's kind of like, what do you have? Whereas, you know, this, it's like we could start out 0-3 this year and still the potential of going 9-0 and playing in Dallas in the championship game is still on the table. You can drop a game and you still, you know, with the tiebreaker, whatever, you still have a chance to play. And so I think that, as well as we normally had a very front loaded schedule, because it's really hard scheduling is independent with how few of them there are now, where our, you know, we normally wouldn't have a bye until like the second week of November when everyone else was in the deep of the thick of their conference schedule. And you know, our November game was like, maybe we get someone Thanksgiving weekend, which is what we got last year. Versus the last 2 years, we played Stanford and USC on Thanksgiving weekend. But a normal November for us was like a G5 school, a bye, FCS school, and then like somebody on rivalry weekend, like a random P5 school, or, you know, maybe not. And so it was the being so front loaded, whereas this year we're playing Sam Houston to kick off, and then we play FCS, SUU, Southern Utah. And then we have a road trip to Arkansas in week three, which is like, hey, that's a real good test. But we also had 2 weeks to get ready, and we're kind of getting through the things. We're not going on the road against Arkansas week one, which is what it kind of normally would have been in the past. And so, so that definitely is something where I think is a factor when it comes to win totals. And I would project the season, just being able to have those tune-up games. But it definitely is a lot of question marks, but cautious optimism.
Okay, I can deal with cautious optimism. So let's use that to kind of dovetail into our and like our final kind of serious question. So like you mentioned, you've got road trips to Arkansas, you've got in conference, you've got going to Kansas, going to TCU, Texas, Oklahoma State, host OU, Cincy, Texas Tech. What's your like prediction for the season? If you had to put a number on it, what would you say is your prediction for 2023 for the BYU Cougars?
Oh, why did you have to ask me? I don't know. So FanDuel has it as 4.5, which I think is a little bit of free money. I think it's hard because I feel like even the league top to bottom is very tough this year, in that they're pretty much like, if you look at the preseason poll, everyone that's ranked like 3 through 12 in the preseason poll could end up being 4-8 or 8-4 or anywhere in between. Like there's a big log jam.
But I think 12.
Yes, I think that, you know, depending on health, I think 6-6 is achievable. 7-7, you know, it depends on, you know, how many. I think there's going to be a lot of close games, and there's going to be a lot of competitive close games. And so how lucky you get with the ball bouncing your way is where kind of that sausage will get made. But I think 6-6 is achievable. I think going to a bowl game, that would be kind of like a good baseline, just with, you know, a new staff coming in and how much we've retooled, you know, and brought in so many transfers. I think we're up to between new incoming freshmen guys who signed a few years ago but went on their LDS mission straight out of high school and are coming back into the program this year, and transfers. We're at 55 new players on the roster this fall compared to last fall.
Wow.
So with that kind of change, it's kind of like, okay, well, the optimistic side is like, you know, maybe 6-6, 7-5. Maybe you end up surprising someone, you know, late in the season. You can, you know, there's a bunch of injuries and, you know, you bag a game against Oklahoma State to finish out the season or something and end up 8-4 is like probably the top end, I would say. But I'd say most likely it's probably 6-6, 7-5.
Okay. I can
go
with that.
I'm definitely smashing the over because I think, you know, we have the first two. We should start out 2-0. And then from there, it's, you know, we got to find three more. I think, you know, between Cincinnati, Iowa State is a potential. And then after that, so you got to find one more in the whole rest of the schedule, you know, but I think the things are there, but there's a lot of toss up games. And so is the culture going to win out in those toss up games?
If you've got a special teams coordinator, then you've got a leg up on Iowa State. So you may take the, take that.
We do have one of those. So
there you go. So let's move on into the hurry up offense, where we're going to ask you some random questions. Some are funny, some are not as funny, but still funny. So I want to start here. We all know, we talked about it off top, you know, Steve Sarkisian famously played for the BYU Cougars. So I want to know just what are BYU fans' impressions of Sark, and like, where does he rank for you among like all time BYU quarterbacks?
So Sark is, this is just so, Sark's senior season in 96, which a lot of people, myself included, will say that's the best BYU team of all time. That's like one of my earliest memories watching is I remember the game against Kansas State in that season. And I remember like he threw a touchdown at the end of the game to KO Kayla Louie. And it was like, it was the KO punch. And it was, you know, so that was like a, that's like one of my earliest memories watching him. So Sark is up there for me. I don't think for most fans, he's in the 1B tier. Like, he's not Jim McMahon or Steve Young or Ty Detmer, but he's in that next tier, which when you look at those three and like all the NCAA records they set, it's kind of hard to be in that tier anyway, right? Like, you gotta be putting up insane video game numbers to get there. He's still known as Sark. There was, you know, we've played his teams before. Like, we played the Washington in 2010 when he was the head coach there. And he kind of was like, someone asked him, like the media asked, like, oh, like, you're going back to Provo and you're playing against your alma mater. Is that like, and he kind of like brushed it off. And so there was a little, you know, it was kind of interesting. And then obviously now, like, things come out later that he had some other things going on in his life that may have changed how he responded towards things. But he, you know, last week at media day, he came up and he was, you know, very gracious and was excited and said that we belong here. And so I think it's Sark is very much beloved. It was there kind of less so since that Washington comment, but in the last 7 days, he's definitely redeemed himself and people are like, oh yeah, Sark is, he's back up on the top of the list now.
Good. Okay. That 96 season really endeared Sark to Texas fans because of what he did at A&M in that game. So like, I feel like that 96 season unites both fan bases.
BYU actually won the first Big 12 game ever. So that was that game versus Texas A&M. It was like a week zero kickoff classic special game. So that was the first game ever under the branding of the Big 12. It was a non-conference game, but we won it. So we will claim that and bring that into the record book.
Bring it with you. I love it. And again, anytime anybody beats A&M, it feels good to me. But so let's talk about this, because we've been kind of dancing around this elephant in the room. Last two times Texas and BYU played, I still have nightmares about it. They absolutely manhandled Texas, essentially signaling the end of the Mac Brown era, like the beginning of the end, and then like giving us a taste of what Charlie Strong would be. Like, what's your lasting memory of those last meetings?
Oh, so I was at both of those games. So that was really fun. The Mac Brown game, that I remember that ended Manny Diaz's career. I think he got fired the next day.
He did.
So
thank you for that.
That was something. That game had a massive lightning delay. And so I don't know if you remember that, but it was like hours. And I remember sitting in the student section at the time, and it was like the clouds were moving faster than anything. It was just like coming in out of nowhere, just like a spaceship almost like coming in. And so people still talk about that game like Hurricane Lavelle because of just this torrential downpour. Yep. And then we ended up getting to play, and it's great. And then I made the trip with a bunch of my friends down to Austin the next year. So that game, mean, we still talk about it. It's Texas fans still like love to be tormented by it. Even like you go on like Reddit CFB or something, there'll be someone with a Texas flair makes it like someone brings up Taysom Hill and they're like, stop, I have PTSD. So it's, I think it just, it was pretty awesome to be there in both of those games and those two performances. I think that being in Daryl Carroll Stadium in 2014, when, you know, in the third quarter of that game, when he hurtled over that defender and kind of went and it just like silent. And except for like us, like the few of us, you know, but just the way it totally took the air out of the stadium. I think in a lot of ways, like it's fun being at your own home stadium when with the Rutgers crowd, but like being on the road and pulling off an upset and just feeling like the palpable void of sadness, like that's going, that is there when a play like that happens, was something that was pretty awesome to see, because it was kind of like, okay, this is, you know, in a lot of ways, it kind of felt like this is what we hope for with being independent, because when we had to go independent on such short notice, like the first 2 years of 2011 and 2012, we had a scheduling agreement with the WAC. So the schedules were awful because there's only so much you can do to put together a schedule in 2 months. Right. And then it got to, you know, where we have, you know, those games in that 2013, 2014 season is kind of like, okay, yeah, this is what independence can be. You know, if we were, it's on us and we have to win, and it's, if we lose, it's our own fault. But it was, that was definitely like a, we feel like we've matured as a program, those kind of statement defining wins for the independence era.
I may have to go back and look. Dylan Haynes became known as the guy who got hurdled a bunch of times. I don't remember if it was Taysom Hill that was.
I know
the Baylor quarterback definitely hurdled him, and that comes up regularly. But the man was known as the human hurdle for quite some time. So, and Taysom Hill comes up regularly on this podcast.
Oh no! Please see. I'm trying to. All the pictures are cut off. You can't see. The number.
All right, that's fine, but still, Dylan Haynes slander will always happen on this podcast. Okay, so one of the fun facts that we stumbled upon about BYU when we were looking at the roster is that the punter is bigger than all but four of the offensive linemen, I think we counted. So if you got them in a cage match, who are you taking? You know, the punter or the field? What's your bet?
Is he that big?
He's 235 is what he's listed.
Oh, yeah, 6'6". Okay, so I was going to say, when you said bigger than, I was thinking weight too, but yeah, he's tall. Versus just everyone on the team, I don't know, he's a tank. Like,
yeah, massive human being.
Yes, and he had there was a game in 2020 where he, like, called his own number and took off on he took off and ran and like pulled it down and we were up like majorly and it was so awkward because it was like, dude, you can't do that. And he was like getting chewed out on the sideline, but I'll have to see what it was. Cause he had, yeah, it was against Texas State. We ended up winning the game 52-14, but in like the third quarter, he had a 49-yard carry on a fake punt. I mean, I might take him. Like he's big. When you look at him, you're like, oh, you're not built like a normal punter. And he's dropped a couple guys too. But I didn't, yeah. When he was changed 6 feet, I was like, wait, has he put on weight? I was thinking like he was pushing like taller, you know, like the Jared Lorenzen of punters.
I mean, I could support
just his
that.
Height.
6'6", 235 is like MMA size though. Like that guy can get the
oxygen. He's a big dude.
I love it. So last question, you know, BYU has, you know, bullied Texas for a couple of years there. Texas is leaving after this year. So which, if you could pick of the other remaining teams, who is BYU going to bully when Texas leaves? What's that rivalry and who are you going to bully?
Before I answer this, let me jump. So his younger brother, the punter's younger brother, is a preferred walk-on this year and is joining the program, but he's only listed at 6'1", 170. So I don't know.
Size difference.
Which is funny.
Get him in the strength and conditioning program.
Yeah, so who's going to be bullied? Ooh, I don't know. I don't want to name anything just because, like, I don't want – rivalries just have to be organic, right? Like, it's just got to happen on the field, and something's got to happen to piss you off, or something's got to happen on Twitter that makes you mad or whatever. And so I think there will be probably, I mean, not bullied though. I mean, the schools that we have the most history with obviously is TCU, having been both in both the WAC and the Mountain West with them previously. We've had series against Baylor and Houston and UCF in recent years, and Cincinnati actually. So we've played almost most of the league at some point during the independence era. So I think, I don't know who I was going to say, I don't know, we'll say Iowa State. They just feel like they're fun to pick on. So we'll just ruin them. Like it's, you know, until they like to be trolls, and there's only, and they live in, they have to live in Iowa. So I don't know, maybe that feels bad because it's bad enough that they have to live in Iowa.
I love it. That's perfect. And the Twitter finger is very strong on Iowa State. So I like that pick. I like that.
Although it's what happened to Cyclone Larry. He's gone. So is he going to come back?
I think it's because he welched on tasing himself in the testicles. And so I think that because that never happened, he had to hang his head in shame. But I miss Cyclone. Okay, so Larry was a good dude.
Okay. Then I would never, then that is why that, then they deserve it. Okay. You can't, if you're going to make a bet, you gotta stick to it.
I love it. I love it. Garrett, man, if folks want more of what you got to offer, where can they find you on the internet?
Yeah, so you can find us, find our show at gehb.co and or give me a follow on Twitter. It's at givehemhellpod.
Love it. Awesome, Garrett. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will we'll talk again, and hopefully we'll it'll be, at least for us, hopefully it's a different result than the last time Texas and BYU played.
Not this time. Maybe the next time after that.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Sounds good. Have a good one, man.
All right. Thanks, bud.
Bye.
I already forgot what I was going to bang the drum on. I said it and I didn't type it out. Do you remember? Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay. So now's the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all. Nope. That brings us to the part of the show where we whip around the rest of campus and we down the 40, starting with cross country, because we love a little bit of cross country here. The cross country team adds Sarah Haverman as the new assistant coach of the women's distance / cross country program, continuing to try to bolster that group and add some director's cut points and win some championships. Floreal is building a squad, and Haverman is a big piece of that puzzle.
Yeah, I love getting a – I'm back, by the way. I love getting a former head coach as an assistant coach. It shows the size of Texas in comparison to every other athletic program, especially when you get more down ballot on these sports, if you will. But, yeah, you get Haverman, who was a head coach at a big program in Illinois, a program that had Olivia Howell, who won the indoor mile championship in 2023, as well as the 1500 in 2021. I think in total she coached 18 All-Americans, so she's definitely bringing where you saw a revamp in the distance program on the men's side, bringing in longtime Washington coach who had a great year there. And that's not to in any way undermine what's been some great individual women's distance performances. We're hoping this just continues to fill out that program and it becomes more and more of a powerhouse. If you remember our Director's Cup episode, cross country is an area where we can improve in the Director's Cup, according to our good friend at Director's Cup Dates.
Speaking of trying to compete in the Director's Cup Dates, Texas, going with the Tirati route and seeing that, what was better than one Tirati but two Tiratis? What's better than one Braswell? That's two Braswells. Texas, double Braswell action. Texas signs Jonah Braswell from Florida, a transfer coming in. Second team all SEC and an SEC all freshman last year. Number 12 of the class of 2022 coming out of IMG Academy. Big pickup for the Horns.
I feel like if I'm going to go ahead and say it on this podcast, if Texas wins a national championship with two Braswells, we will do a Bill Brasky SNL riff. Gerald and I bringing back Bill Brasky for both, of course, Micah and Jonah Braswell, because you can never have enough Braswells.
Kyle said that I'm going to say that I will lobby for Texas to always have a pair of siblings on the tennis roster as well, because it's proven. Two times out of two, if it happens, it'll be all... Right, so former, moving on to baseball, keeping it with transfers, a former Duke infielder and outfielder, Luke Storm, great name, commits to Texas out of the transfer portal.
Yeah, Luke Storm is a great name, but Duke Luke Storm is even better. That's just great. So Texas is going to have to live up to his expectations because he gave that up.
Fair.
But he's a not small feller, 6'5", 240 pounds, played first, second, in addition to DH and some right field, so... a guy who can be kind of one of those, he's a good player, just get him on the field, guys, he can plug in. Texas, look, let's just say it, had one of the probably perfect combination of guys we knew weren't coming back, get drafted and celebrate that. The prospects who came, getting those kids to campus and getting people back, which we'll talk about in just a moment. You know, just adding more talented guys. I'm excited for it, right? He might come in and take either of those last two positions I listed, right fielder or DH, might come in and make one of those his own immediately.
Yeah, I mean, Texas needs to bolster that lineup. He's a guy who hit 258, slugged 419, 17 doubles, 10 home runs. Like, he's a guy who could put up some points and put up some runs, and I think Texas needs to add some of that with, you know, guys like Dylan Campbell leaving campus, right? So I think there's a need for a bat. I think he's a lefty as well, so like hitting from the left side of the plate is always helpful for the Longhorns. So part of the reason why that Luke Storm is probably going to look at right field or DH is because Texas gets a couple guys back, specifically Porter Brown. Downtown Porter Brown coming back to likely pick up back his position in left field, I think, right? Like, I don't know. I don't see him going anywhere else. And then Tanner Witt officially announced that he is coming back for the year. EK is done. Dylan Campbell signing with LA. So, yeah, Porter Brown and Tanner Witt staying on campus. And then joining them, young guns, Matt Scott the second and Ryan Schwartz both committed to Texas baseball to try to build out that roster. Again, Texas is reloading, and it's looking really good, Kyle. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I mean, I think getting LeBaron Johnson, Tanner Witt, Porter Brown, like as much talent as you could have hoped for. You knew, you know, the guys who were gone were gone. But yeah, I think Pebro, he will obviously occupy left field. I love that in his I'm back statement, he said more to accomplish. Got to go, you know, something to the effect of hang with my boys behind left field. Love that. Embrace. That's the way you make yourself an absolute fan favorite. That and game-winning home runs and game-winning throwouts at the plate. You keep doing those things, and yeah, you'll continue to be a legend. Downtown Porter Brown. The new guys. Matt Scott is a big kid, 6'4", 195, right-handed pitcher. Also plays outfield out of Klein Oak here in Houston. He has a 9.5 grade per perfect game. Another player with a 9.5 grade. His more focused on the defensive backstop. He plays all kinds of positions, third base, first base. But catcher is his likely position. Ryan Schwartz from Indian Trail, North Carolina, also graded, like I said, at a 9.5 per perfect game. So really, really good recruit there. And again, Texas has a long lineage of really solid catchers. There's going to be a new one as Guillemette also signed and has gone to the next level, but I think Galvan is got a chance to continue that legacy, and by the time Schwartz gets there, who knows, he could be the next in a line of dependable, lovable backstops.
Gotta see how that throwing arm is, because that's the legacy, really, for the Texas catchers. That brings us to the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. So, Kyle, what are you banging the drum on this week?
Gerald, Aggies have been trying to tell everyone. Like, you guys don't get it. You guys don't get it. They're just so mean. Guys, you're terrible. They're going to steal everything. They're the worst. They're so mean. They make you feel bad about yourself. They're mean guys. We hate them. The Longhorns, they're bullies. They're bad. Burn Orange Media Conspiracy, they're the worst, they're bad guys, it's you don't understand, they're going to take over the conference, they ruin everything, you think you're good looking, and then you see them, and you don't think you are anymore, it's tough, I hate them, that's what Aggies say, they say that, they're a little self-conscious, and I will say, for the first time in a long time, the Aggies were absolutely right. Texas joined the SEC from the Big 12, we called it the last Big 12 media days ever, because I guess it is for Texas, but it also is for anyone who cares to watch those things. next year, the media day of import will be the SEC media day. And even though the Aggies have been in the conference for, I don't know, who really cares when they left, a decade plus, the SEC has just come into Texas to take recruits from A&M. They have not really, besides playing games, spent much more time thinking about visiting in the great state. But now, all of a sudden, Texas and Oklahoma, who, you know, play a famous game in the city of Dallas and control the Dallas market, join the conference, and the SEC, for the first time in their entire history, is moving out of the Southeast into Texas for SEC Media Day 2024, the inaugural Texas and, to some extent, OU SEC Media Day will be in Dallas, Texas. It was announced today. I think it's beautiful. I love it. I think it's amazing. We haven't, as we said, we've won all the other sports. It's just football now, but we haven't even won yet. And already the size, the force of will, the impact that the Longhorns have on the college landscape, again, before even winning in college football. Just imagine if we start winning, it's going to be real bad. But yeah, they appreciate the SEC. Y'all are so sweet, opening the door for us, rolling out the red carpet. Y'all just, you know how to girl make a girl feel special. Really love it. I hate that our less pretty sister never got to experience that, A&M, the redheaded stepchild. I hate that they are just seething at the fact that this happened. Actually, I don't. It's so beautiful. Giggum Schadenfreude is the best, the best that exists.
Ha 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 ha. Speaking of media days, I'm banging the drum this week on the outgoing conference in the Big 12 media days, and it seemed like everybody wanted to take their shots at Texas and OU leaving the conference, whether it was Mike Gundy throwing some shade, whether it was conference commissioner Brett Yormark throwing some shade about what Texas and OU wanted to lose to Florida and Arkansas rather than Kansas State. And first of all, like, know the conference. Texas hasn't lost to Kansas State in 6 years. You could have picked the other purple team and had a completely great dunk, but instead you chose to be stupid, Brett. But like, it seems to me that, like, yes, this is an ugly divorce, and yes, this is still people who know they're going to be divorced but still have to live together for tax purposes or whatever, but like, don't be jerks about it. Like, I've taken my fair share of shots about, like, yes, Texas is leaving for greener pastures. Yes, Texas is going to make money, more money. The Big 12 is going to be fine. I love the Big 12. I've loved our experience in the Big 12, right? Like, I have been a Big 12 stan. I had a conversation today on Twitter about how the Big 12 really sets the pace for what happens nationally, offensively, and defensively when it comes to it. And really, there's a larger conversation to be had about how that's actually coming up from high school football, but that's neither here nor there. But like, I loved the Big 12, and I loved Texas's time in the Big 12 for, you know, as much as one could based on what happened the last 15 years or so. But it seems wild to me that a commissioner, regardless of current state of affairs, like, blatantly take a shot at two teams that are still actively going to be a part of your conference for the next 12 months and will likely represent your conference in several championship settings, right? Like, the Big 12 really wants to tout Texas and OU when it's conference championship time, when it's softball championship time, when it's volleyball championship time, when it's soccer championship time, when it's rowing championship time, when it's tennis championship time, when it's baseball championship time. But they like to take shots when it's football time. So again, keep that same energy all year. If you're going to take shots at Texas and OU during football season, I cannot freaking wait. Like, I'm not going to guarantee it, but if Texas and OU play in Arlington, I want them to close the doors and play the Reigns of Castamere and stab that dude in the neck. No, I'm not gonna say that. I want them to play Reigns of Castamere as he hands over the trophy to whoever, whether it's Steve Sarkisian, whether it's Brent Venables. I want them playing it from the rafters. Dun, 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 dun. Just to know. I want you to know that the Sarkisians send their regards.
I like it. I like it a lot. I like all the things you said there. It just is one of those, right? Like, if that's what the commissioner, the deputy commissioner, these people are saying in public, like, is there something to the fact that, like, you know, OU only had one holding called against their opponent all year, and Texas had multiple games where that was the case, or their opponent had, you know, plus 15 penalties called, you know, against Texas versus them, or what was Oklahoma State, I think 14-0, you know, so... yeah, it's interesting if they're saying those things out loud that maybe leads some credence to the most tinfoil internet conspiracy message board theories out there. Maybe they're right all along.
Just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you. And that's all we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
Oh, you can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carpenter. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Kyle Carpenter, at Texas Pregamer, but Threads. is at Kyle Carpenter.
Follow me on Twitter at GH Goodrich. Follow the show on Twitter and Threads at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, the Longhorn Republic on Threads, Instagram, Facebook, all of that. Thank you so much for tuning in again this week. I'm done with this today. Thank you so much. And until next time, hook 'em.
Hook 'em, man.